This week on Making Contact.
This law is anti-American because it is anti-American to be anti-immigrant. We are a country of immigrants and we want our courts to do the right thing.
Arizona. Even the state's name has become synonymous with the battle over immigration. All across the country, opponents of Arizona's SB 1070 have stepped up efforts to stop enforcement of the law. But the debate continues.
Once an immigrant, an alien, an illegal alien is in the United States, the chances of removal are so low. Basically, crossing the border is the same as crossing the finish line.
On this edition, we look at how Arizona's SB 1070 is affecting immigrant communities and the nation. I'm Andrew Stelzer, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information. On April 23, 2010, Arizona Governor Jan Brewer stood before hordes of press from all over the world as she announced her decision on whether to sign the most restrictive immigration law in the United States.
The bill I'm about to sign into law, Senate Bill 1070, represents another tool for our state to use as we work to solve a crisis that we did not create and the federal government has refused to fix.
There are more than 400,000 illegal immigrants in Arizona. Under the law, local policemen can act as immigration agents. They can detain anyone who they suspect is an illegal alien, arrest or fine the person if they fail to provide a U.S. identification document, or arrest anyone who hires or transports an undocumented worker.
Protests across the state of Arizona began even before SB 1070 was signed. And in the 3 months before it took effect, a movement began to build across the country. One activist strategy was a nationwide boycott of the state of Arizona.
Do you remember when Cesar Chavez was alone in California working for the agricultural workers? He was alone. Yeah. But then in Arizona, they didn't buy grapes anymore. And then in Chicago, they didn't buy grapes anymore. And Seattle, they didn't buy grapes anymore. And Miami, they didn't buy grapes anymore. New York, they didn't buy grapes anymore. And guess what? Arizona, it is time for you to march in the 21st century, or you too will be boycotted across the state.
We have done everything under the law to have our voices and our communities be heard, only to be met with more repressive laws. That is why today we are doing a massive, ongoing call-out for massive civil disobedience, nonviolent civil disobedience all over the state of Arizona and all over the United States of America.
You're listening to Making Contact. This is Carl Jagmundsen, and we're here in our studio to talk about the organizing that's been taking place in the wake of SB 1070, the anti-immigrant law in Arizona that has sparked protests and outrage across the country. Joining me today are Marisa Franco, National Lead Organizer with Right to the City Alliance, a national alliance of racial, economic, and environmental justice organizations, and Andrea Cristina Mercado, Organizing Director with Mujeres Unidas y Activas, a grassroots organization of Latina immigrant women in the San Francisco Bay Area. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Let's start with you, Marisa. Can you give us some background on SB 1070?
We have seen the implementation and the advancement of a strategy which is enforcement through attrition. It's a fancy way of saying that it's public policy aimed to make the lives of immigrants so miserable that they leave on their own accord. And so SB 1070 was a law that mandated people to carry documentation that essentially legalized racial profiling, outlawed sanctuary cities in the state of Arizona, made it illegal for day laborers or anyone to solicit employment on the street, among other provisions in the law.
Andrea, we know that SB 1070 didn't come about in isolation. It's part of a broader political agenda that targets immigrants. What are the strategies that are being used to criminalize immigrants?
What we're facing is part of a long-term strategy which has been in place for quite some time. I think there's three main elements. One is to close off all possibility for economic survival. The second part is to deny access to justice for migrants, you know, making it harder and harder for them to place a wage claim or a police report. And third, really to normalize mistreatment through rituals of humiliation and hateful language, which we're seeing a lot right now with the Minutemen and in the Tea Party. You see this kind of mobilization of hate. And so I think that the right has been really successful in passing at the local level these anti-solicitation of day labor ordinances, employer sanctions. We see the elimination of ethnic studies programs. We see this growing movement against birthright citizenship. And then clearly SB 1070 in Arizona is another policy which is really attacking the right of migrants to exist in our society.
So who do these strategies serve and what are they gaining from this?
There's a sector of the right wing which is very anti-immigrant and xenophobic. So I think it's this broader agenda that the right wing has been put in place for quite some time now that really questions who is an American. I think SB 1070 really gets to the heart of that because essentially it criminalizes driving while brown, right? Or doing anything that, you know, you can be stopped and asked for your papers and have to prove, you know, your right to be driving to school or to the store.
We are living in a time of pretty dire economic circumstances for many people across the country. And what the right has done is seize upon the fear, the frustration, and the despair of many people around the foreclosure crisis, the unemployment crisis, and what people are living, and essentially has placed the blame on some of the most vulnerable people. So the farm worker, the day laborer is to blame for the fact that John Smith can't get a job. And so politicians like Governor Jan Brewer, Senator Russell Pierce of Arizona, are frankly reckless in their behavior because they're advancing legislation and advancing a very hateful rhetoric that places the blame of the economic crisis on the backs of the most vulnerable people.
So Marissa, you were involved in organizing many different actions against SB 1070. What were the goals of these protests and who were the main targets?
What we sought to do was to beat 1070, not only in the courts, but in the community, in the streets. And ultimately, with the hope and with the intention for that struggle in Arizona to spark a movement nationally demanding from the bottom up legalization with dignity for the over 12 million immigrants in this country. And so we felt like Arizona was a rogue state. The governor of Arizona and the state legislature has converted the state legislature into a virtual legislative laboratory in which they are experimenting with the most draconian laws to inflict real harm on communities. And that by signing that legislation, Governor Jan Brewer essentially stood on the side of history with the segregationists of the South. And that, similar to that movement of the civil rights movement that demanded the intervention of the federal government, we were asking for the same from President Obama. So Obama was the target of the campaign, and it was to demand federal intervention in Arizona on behalf of the people that were suffering these attacks. And also we wanted to really put pressure on the Republican Party of the state and the state itself through an economic boycott. So overall, it was political and economic pressure through a diverse array of tactics carried out both in Arizona locally, but we also called upon folks from across the country to participate.
Maybe you can talk to us a little bit about what were those tactics specifically, both locally and nationally?
The broad strategy, you know, was to unite all who you can be united, to flip the script on the racist, hateful rhetoric, and to not comply with this law. And the particular things that we did to enact those strategies was to, one, build barrio defense committees. So go into the community, organize, and build committees that allowed for folks to be able to access some level of resources and to be able to prepare themselves for what was going to happen. So folks got together and did Know Your Rights trainings, prepared their families for potential detention, deportation, but then folks also got together and fought. So that was one element. The second was the economic boycott that we saw that was specifically targeted at the Arizona Diamondbacks because of their owner Ken Kendrick's explicit support of Sheriff Joe Arpaio and the Republican Party, and holding fundraisers for the Republican Party in a publicly financed stadium, Chase Field. And so every place that the Diamondbacks went to play this summer, they were met by protests outside and inside of the game. Major League Baseball players stood up and spoke out against this law, as well as many, many celebrities and musicians. The third was noncompliance. That was going to schools, to local police, to ask them not to comply with this law. But in addition to that, it was our commitment to direct action and taking it directly to the streets to demonstrate to the state apparatus in Arizona, to the administration, and to the judge hearing this case, that we were not going to take this laying down and that the line was essentially being drawn. And so there was a pretty large mobilization and direct action that took place on the 29th of July, in which over 80 people were arrested in nonviolent civil disobedience, really trying to put a face to who is behind police and ICE collaboration in this country, and for people to see that this is what an enforcement-first approach looks like. It looks like Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who instituted Tent City, who instituted chain gangs. There are countless amounts of cases against this sheriff for the draconian conditions he has inmates in, and for the explicit racial profiling that he's conducting, and just the hateful rhetoric that he's advancing as sheriff. And so we wanted for people to actually see this is what, if you allow for Arizona to lead this country in terms of immigration policy, this is the kind of society we're looking at.
So we know that's not where we want the country to go to. And you organize all these protests and actions. How successful were these actions? What's the end result here?
Well, I think that Arizona's not the same. I think that the silver lining at such hateful legislation, such hateful rhetoric, is that people make the very simple decision that they're not going to take it anymore. And so the absolute outpouring of resistance and opposition to this law brought many people together, and I think and I hope that essentially laid the groundwork for a foundation of folks in resistance in the whole state of Arizona. Specifically, what I'm talking about is people organizing, building organizations, building relationships between communities. There was a relationship built between the indigenous community. There was relationships with the African-American community, with the LGBTQ community. And I think that essentially this very unfortunate, horrible moment, an ugly moment in the history of the state of Arizona, could potentially produce the seeds to create a better Arizona. And so I think that fundamentally is a victory. I think the second thing is that it really allowed for the emergence of an alternative path for legalization. And that is a recommitment to organizing at the very basic level, in the community level. It opened the door for campaigns that are local, so that so many organizations across the country have been handcuffed because essentially everything is being decided in Washington, D.C. And the fact of the matter is that we can't always be going to D.C. We can't. And frankly, the fate of so many people has just been really turned into political football. And so what we have now with the emergence of this third path is for what, like, similar to what's happening here in the Bay Area with folks organizing against secure communities, folks organizing against the raids, against the checkpoints, organizing against the wage theft that happens, and trying to beat back some of those strategies that Andrea talked about. And that, I think, is a victory. And then third, I think that it just re-energized the movement for legalization. I think that people saw it was the kind of a slap in the face to the community. And I think that people from all walks of life, all classes, affected or not, really felt it. I think there was a universal feeling of disgust and horror at what's happening in Arizona. And I think that the next couple years will really be the test of where can we take this alternative path, and can we turn the tide on an enforcement-focused approach towards a human rights, dignity-first approach.
We're talking with Marisa Franco, with Right to the City Alliance and Andrea Cristina Mercado with Mujeres Unidas y Activas. We'll be right back. The immigrant rights are human
rights. Get all of our rights, get attacked by the right. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. Because of listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the U.S., Canada, and South Africa. To find out how to support us, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. We now return to a discussion of Arizona's immigration law, SB 1070, hosted by Making Contact's Carl Jogbundam Singh. Dirty work in Latin America, exploiting the
earth, exploiting the people, killing their homes. Can you help us to understand what are the implications of this summer's protests in Arizona for immigrants' rights nationally and for people of color around the country?
I think what happened in Arizona really presented a challenge to the immigrant rights movement. More broadly, across the country, organizations which had been really focused in Washington, D.C. and comprehensive immigration reform all of a sudden, I think, realized the importance, and it kind of really reaffirmed the importance of the community organizing and the local campaigns that are being waged at a city and a county level. And some organizations have been focused on those all along, but now I think we see this kind of shift and a real recognition that, you know, every time we reaffirm a sanctuary city, or every time we pass a municipal ID or a driver's license or protect in-state tuition for undocumented students, like, those are real victories for our movement. And I think it's only through those local victories that we'll ever be able to go to D.C. from a position of power.
So how did 1070 affect the what's been taking place in D.C., the legislation that's going on, both for folks who are organizing in support of 1070 and then, and more importantly, I guess, for folks who are organizing against it?
Broadly in the immigrant rights movement, clearly people were absolutely appalled at 1070 and what it represented. You know, I think for many years now, the strategy has been comprehensive immigration reform. There's been many points when we thought that we're very close to reaching that. And I think that folks really try to use the example of Arizona as a rally cry to finally pass comprehensive immigration reform. So you saw legislators coming to Arizona to speak and who really tried to stand on the side of folks organizing locally, but their ultimate solution was comprehensive immigration reform. And I think that it ended up being slightly controversial in different contexts, because the problem, what's happened with comprehensive immigration reform, as it is a challenge in just legislative strategy in general, is the concessions you make and what your bottom line is always, you know, it's a struggle to get something passed in D.C. And where the political spectrum is shifted so much to the right, and the rhetoric is so much on criminalization and the path to legalization being riddled with mea culpas. And so I think that folks really wanted to push through and see about having that reform pass, and then try to use the example of Arizona as, look, this is what could actually happen. I think where it got challenging in the movement is that some people said, look, that's actually not going to be the solution. The package that exists currently is actually not going to undo Arizona's. In fact, it may permit it to continue in certain cases. I think for the right, it was an emboldened opportunity. I think just as it was an opportunity for us to come together and unite, I think the right also did the same. And again, was able to bring almost fundamental don'ts in public policy to actually be considered. So the idea that states can legislate their own immigration policy, so you'd have 50 states, potentially 50 different sets of laws around immigration, that was actually even being considered and people were fighting for that, I think gave the right a lot of room to advance their ideology. And so I think that ultimately the debate and the motion to try to get legislation passed was almost dead in the water, and it just became political football between the Democrats and the Republicans, because both parties in many ways are afraid of this issue because of how the tension that it represents in terms of the opposing interests on both sides.
I agree. And I think one other thing for the immigrant rights movement is, as Marisa was saying, you know, there was this whole conversation about, you know, what concessions are we willing to make in order to gain, you know, legalization for 12 million undocumented folks in this country. And ultimately, a lot of the concessions that were being talked about were enforcement provisions. And I think Arizona really challenged the movement to really see what does enforcement really look like? what does it mean to basically embolden, you know, local police to enforce immigration laws? And I think it really challenged the movement to look more closely at this issue of criminalization.
Can you talk to us a little bit more about the idea of criminalization in this comprehensive immigration reform?
So within comprehensive immigration reform, you know, it was so interesting. I can't remember the name of it now, but even, you know, the 26-page document that outlined the Democrats' strategy, they don't even talk about legalization until page 24. The first 23 pages were all about enforcement. And I think that, you know, really illustrates how immigration reform to some is really how are we going to secure the borders and criminalize this population. And so ultimately, you know, the proposals that were on the table were immigrants would have to basically agree to a misdemeanor. I think plead to a misdemeanor in having crossed the border. They would need to pay a fine. There was no real path to citizenship or political equality. So, you know, I think those were a lot of the things that were on the table. And I think Arizona really demonstrated the dangers of accepting, basically institutionalizing enforcement on the federal level, right? So Arizona shows, you know, what it can look like on the state level. But ultimately, the proposals for immigration reform at the national level were institutionalizing that kind of police and immigration official collaboration on a national scale and the dangers of that.
So where are things at today with SB 1070?
Judge Susan Bolton issued a judgment that essentially split it down the middle. Under no circumstances did we see that as a victory. She threw out the sections on racial profiling and the requirement for people to carry their papers at all times. So that part was thrown out. What was kept is that it outlawed sanctuary cities in the state of Arizona. It allows for any citizen in the state of Arizona to sue the government if they feel that the immigration laws are not being followed strictly enough. It makes it illegal for people to solicit work in the street. And it made it illegal to harbor an undocumented person in your car, in your home. And so that actually went forward. And following that judgment, Governor Jan Brewer appealed.
We've been speaking with Marisa Franco and Andrea Cristina Mercado. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
That appeals court hearing took place amidst public protest in San Francisco Monday, November 1st. Making Contact's Kyungjin Lee was there to see both the people's movement against SB 1070 and the next stage in a legal battle that will likely wind its way all the way to the Supreme Court.
The streets outside the courthouse were filled with protesters, while inside, attorneys for the state of Arizona and the Department of Justice argued in front of a three-judge federal appeals court panel. Arizona Governor Jan Brewer traveled to California to watch the hearing. Attorney John Boma, representing the state of Arizona, argued that until federal immigration policy is changed, Arizona should have a right to make and enforce immigration laws.
There's no reason why Arizona should stand by and suffer the consequences of a broken system when Arizona has 15,000 well-trained and capable police officers, law enforcement authorities on the ground who could help fix the system. And that's what Arizona wants to do. So we ask that you vacate this injunction and allow Arizona to get on with taking care of the health, safety, and welfare of its citizens.
Edwin Kneeler, the U.S. Deputy Solicitor General, argued on behalf of the federal government. He addressed the conflict with federal enforcement, saying a patchwork of separate immigration laws for every state would be confusing and detrimental to maintaining relationships with other countries. But Kneeler also criticized the severe nature of Arizona's law.
A statute like this can affect lawful permanent residents and citizens because another important factor underlying our immigration laws is to respect the civil liberties and not subject people to interrogations and to police surveillance. And this statute, because of its mandatory requirement based on minimal reasonable suspicion, we think raises that concern very profoundly.
The case drew so much attention that legal arguments were broadcast live in viewing rooms across the country, from New York to Seattle, and hundreds of protesters filled the streets in opposition to SB 1070. They marched, chanted, and sang to support the rights of undocumented immigrants. Juana Tello, an organizer with People Organized to Win Employment Rights in San Francisco, said SB 1070 ignores the root of the issue, that migrants are forced to leave their homeland because of trade policies enacted by the United States, like NAFTA.
Economic refugees are just here for a better, to create a better lifestyle for themselves and to be able to provide for their families. People don't choose to migrate for fun. People migrate here risking their lives to be able to come here for a job. A lot of people would choose to go back home, but because of the poverty in their country, they have to be here.
Charlotte Noss, a recent law school graduate, said scapegoating immigrants won't help the U.S. climb out of its economic crisis.
It's unfortunate that immigrants are such an easy target for the things that are going wrong in this society. And I would encourage people to take a broader look at what immigrants bring to this society and how much richer we are as a culture and as an economy because of the immigrant input into this country, and that to blame the current crisis on immigrants is just short-sighted.
From the mountain.
Go to Mexico with that song, sir. Go to Mexico with that sign. Go to Mexico with that sign, sir. The terror is in Mexico.
As a delegation of protesters marched toward the courthouse, they were greeted by a line of police and a handful of proponents of SB 1070, who gathered to support the controversial law. Stephen Chan, an accountant in San Francisco, said regardless of what undocumented immigrants contribute to society, the operative word is illegal.
The immigration problem is not difficult to solve. Deport the illegals, secure the border.
Juana Tello disagrees.
Fixing the problem is not creating racist laws like that. It's creating and restructuring a system as a whole.
Tello said the next step for the immigrant rights movement is to stop other states, such as Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Pennsylvania, and South Carolina, from adopting similar laws like Arizona.
There's five states currently looking towards creating something like SB 1070 in Arizona. And so part of what's important is preventing those states from getting to that alternative and really educating the masses about why undocumented people are coming here to begin with and making sure that people understand the root causes of that.
It could take months for the appeals court to issue their ruling. Most legal observers believe that parts of SB 1070 will be struck down and others upheld. The court's decision, however, won't keep the movements both for and against the rights of undocumented immigrants from organizing and making their case in the streets. For Making Contact, I'm Kyungjin Lee.
We shall not be moved.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Special thanks to volunteer Marie Choi for help producing this show. For a CD copy of this program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736 or check out our website at radioproject.org to get our podcast, download past shows, or help make a difference by supporting our work. Making Contact is supported by listeners like you. You allow us to continue to offer our program for free to radio stations across the U.S. and in Canada and South Africa. Thank you. And thanks for listening to Making Contact.